China's economy is slowing, but not because of trade. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. China's economy grew at 6.5% in the third quarter. That is actually slow for China. It's been on a debt-fueled growth spurt for some time. 6.5% is the slowest pace of growth there since 2009. This slowdown is happening, of course, in the context of a trade conflict between the U.S. and China. Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak joins us now from Shanghai. Good morning.
Hi, Sabri.
So is this slowdown directly a result of U.S. tariffs? Is that what we're seeing?
Not really. The figure only covers the first 9 months, so it's not going to reflect the latest and heaviest round of tariffs the U.S. imposed on $200 billion worth of Chinese imports, which only began at the end of September. Instead, what we're seeing is a reflection of China's domestic issues, mainly the government reining in debt.
Are officials in China concerned that U.S. tariffs might actually make their economic situation worse?
No, because officials have said they have the tools to withstand U.S. tariffs, because Chinese goods to the U.S. only account for 3 or 4% of the GDP. I've spoken to analysts who feel there really is a very strong narrative among the Trump administration that the Chinese economy was in the slumps and that the tariffs will bring China on its knees. But they really don't see that. They say if you look at both consumption of goods and services and income growth, the picture really doesn't look that bleak.
Well, if this current decline is not really trade-related, is there any concern that it could become trade-related, that the current slowdown in growth could make it harder to withstand pressure from Washington over trade going forward?
Sure. It limits the tools China can use to cut financial risks. But the real vulnerability is really psychological. If consumers feel tougher times are ahead, then they will likely save more than spend, and that can slow down the economy further.
Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak, thanks so much.
Thanks, Sabri.
Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.2%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 2 to 0.4% range, with the Dow future up 50 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 3.18%. In a lawsuit made public this week, advertisers are accusing Facebook of knowingly misrepresenting the amount of time users spent watching videos. Facebook has said, yes, its numbers were overstated in 2016, but it didn't do anything wrong. Now, who cares how long people watched videos on Facebook? Well, news organizations, actually. Thinking video was where the ad money was, they upended entire business models. Marketplace's Ben Bradford has more.
2016 was the year of the infamous phrase pivot to video. Facebook was flogging its soaring video viewership, encouraging new and traditional media outlets desperate for revenue to dive into video. Digital media company Mike was one of the many takers. It's hard to say what role the juiced viewership numbers may have played, but this week's news certainly has made former Mike video producer Gabe Gonzalez reflect.
I think it sort of made me think about how shaky this giant shift was to begin with.
It felt like a gold rush.
University of Oregon digital journalism professor Damian Radcliffe.
Video content was sexy. This was where all the growth was.
But Radcliffe says, like in a traditional gold rush, few players struck it rich. Consumer appetite for video was less than promised. Just months after he was hired, Gonzalez was let go.
And we started seeing the same happen everywhere. And, you know, I think at that point you realize the jig is up, right?
Media companies reliant on Facebook took another hit this year when the social network pivoted away from them, prioritizing personal posts from friends and family. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
Not everyone gets a chance to study the economy in school. Anyway, who doesn't need a brush up? Marketplace helps you continue your education in a way that we hope is smart, accessible, and hopefully even a bit fun. Your donation is not only an investment in your own learning, but also in helping us make more people smart about the economy. And that, we think, is good for everyone. To learn how you can help, visit marketplace.org/investors. Thank you.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
The opioid crisis has put a spotlight on how doctors prescribe painkillers. A quarter of chronic pain patients misuse the opioids that they are prescribed. One startup in Nashville has become a sort of watchdog for health insurers, which pay out an extra $10,000 to $20,000 a year when someone is actively abusing painkillers. Blake Farmer of WPLN in Nashville reports.
States have tightened dosage limits for opioids and required that doctors update shared databases to track use, but physicians still don't always get the full picture.
In fairness to the practitioners, they just do not know what they don't know.
John Donahue started Axial Healthcare to help police abuse with big data that only insurance companies have. Axial has inked deals with big health plans in high opioid abuse states like West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Tennessee. Axial crunches claims data from millions of patients. It can reveal things like an undisclosed diagnosis for depression or anxiety that might make them more at risk of drug abuse. Sophisticated algorithms do what no doctor ever could.
Including opioid use disorder-related deaths, so we can see suicides in the data.
Sometimes it does take another pair of eyes to kind of redirect your thinking for that particular patient.
Aaron Galloway is a physician assistant whose former pain clinic was called out by Axial. Doctors there ended up lowering dosages and weaning some patients off opioids altogether. But imagine being in a doctor's shoes, accused from afar of endangering patients. It's a confrontation that requires diplomacy. Nancy Hooper is a licensed pharmacist who makes those phone calls.
And then they're like, well, you just don't understand how hard it is for these patients to come off this medication. Then I can say, actually, I do.
Hooper has her own addiction story. She started sneaking painkillers at her pharmacy and got addicted, but was eventually caught.
5 years ago, I was sitting in jail and literally thought my life, as I knew it, was over.
Hooper was able to reinstate her pharmacist license, and Axial's John Donahue saw her checkered past as a secret weapon in driving down medical and even societal costs, which have been put at $500 billion a year.
It's, you know, billions of dollars in amenable, avoidable health care expenses associated with poor treatment.
Lives are on the line, but Donahue says so are bottom lines. In Nashville, I'm Blake Farmer for Marketplace.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Redmond Carolipio. Our engineer is Brian Allison. And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.